Hello, I'm Ines de la Quatera. This is number 0254 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0254. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Carl Thomas Jr., an outreach pastor with Triple X Church, and he talks about one of their other sites, FacebookCheating.com.
It's more of user-driven content, so it's people just sharing their stories about the things that unfortunately are happening on Facebook way too often, or at least starting on Facebook way too often and then going from online to offline. It's a place for people to just share and talk and kind of bring awareness to the fact that there's a lot of relationships that are being formed innocently, or at least that's the way that it's portrayed, and then going to other things.
Donna Hoffman, a.k.a. the Interior Design Advocate, who talks about how realistic the experiences on TV design shows are compared to real life.
TV land is what you see on the flat screen, and reality is what happens in your family room or your living room. First of all, we all love all the TV shows on decorating and design. Bravo's got some great ones, HGTV has some great ones, and they're fun and they're entertaining and they can be informative, but generally speaking, you're seeing a tiny little manipulated snippet of what the decorating and design process really is in terms of cost and in terms of real-time, real-life experience.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman with a review of a must-read novel called The Girl Who Was Saturday Night. So to find out what I think of this must-read book, you must give a listen to Book Banter, which is happening in a few minutes on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0254 was Ines de la Quatera, a video journalist with Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And thank you very much, Ines, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Chinese hospital in Nanjing, the capital of Jiangsu province, has introduced a new machine that makes sperm donation even easier, an automatic sperm extractor. Because if there's one thing they need in China, it is easier access to sperm. The effortless machine features a massage pipe that can be adjusted to suit the height of the user. All the gentleman has to do is plug in the frequency, amplitude, and temperature, and then, well, plug in. The pipe does the rest with a gentle back and forth motion. It is even equipped with a small screen for those feeling uninspired. And with a population over 1.25 billion souls, I don't think the Chinese are uninspired in this area. However, according to the director of the urology department of the hospital, the machine is designed to help individuals that are finding it difficult to retrieve sperm the old-fashioned way. Okay, I've looked at a video that shows this machine at a trade show. There wasn't anybody hooked up to it, but it was running. And I have visions of this machine going haywire, and if that's the case, then you have to ask yourself, is this the way you want to be found? Yeah. 32-year-old Robert Wallace, a Houston software developer, filed a lawsuit in May to get back some items after a failed romance. According to Wallace, he had loaned a laptop computer, $2,000 in cash, and his Harry Potter DVDs to his sweetheart, Ms. Nomi Mims, who happens to be a local stripper. Now, Wallace said the loans were made only because he thought she was in love with him and that they were building a future together, but now realizes he was wrong. Mims calls the items gifts and notes, "I've given him gifts too. You know, how do I get my booty back?" Wow. Now, there's someone with an overextended sense of worth, thinking of her booty as a gift. Classy. I think it's time we hear from Sir John Gielgud again.
Thank you for a memorable afternoon. Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
Yeah. A Utah man who pleaded guilty to an assault charge has been sentenced to 30 days in jail following a fight over saving seats at a Mormon church. Now, during the incident, Wayne Dodge got into a fight with another family after he sat in seats that they were trying to save at the Meadows Ward of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Plain City. The chapel was especially busy that day because of a baby blessing and a missionary farewell. The argument spilled out into the parking lot, and Dodge allegedly beat a man from the seat-saving family until he was bloody. Dodge is also accused of swerving his car to hit the man when he was driving away from the church. Dodge pleaded guilty to misdemeanor assault in exchange for a charge of aggravated assault being dropped. The 52-year-old was also ordered to complete an anger management class as part of his 12 months probation and pay a $550 fine. Okay, if you're getting into a fight over seating at a church, then you've missed the whole point of actually being in a church. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Florida woman was caught on surveillance video attempting to eat a full bag of marijuana during an arrest for DUI. Tavish Smith was pulled over on suspicion of DUI after she allegedly crashed her truck two times and was seen driving the wrong way. Now, during the stop, officers searched the vehicle and discovered a sandwich bag full of marijuana. After the suspect was placed in the back of a squad car, she asked the officers to go get her flip-flops from her trunk. Smith was then able to wriggle out of her handcuffs and grab the bag from the front seat of the squad car. She then quickly chowed down on its contents. "My car is smelling like the stuff you had in your seat," the arresting trooper says in the video. "I hope that's not why this marijuana bag was open over here. Bags of weed just don't go missing inside a police car, and I've got it all on video." Smith denied eating the pot, but she allegedly left marijuana crumbs everywhere. The 45-year-old allegedly ate about 12 grams of grass, and you'll be glad to know the moment she ate the evidence, her misdemeanor charges for minor hit and run, DUI, and marijuana possession were bumped up to a felony. I'm sure not only did her misdemeanor charges change after eating that much grass, I'm positive her demeanor also changed. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Recently, I saw a repeat of a documentary called Facebook Follies. One of the people featured in the film was Ken Savage, and the website he eventually created was FacebookCheating.com. Now, Ken is no longer with the website, but it is still going strong. And to bring us up to date with what the website deals with is Carl Thomas Jr. He's an outreach pastor with Triple X Church. FacebookCheating.com is part of their organization. And Carl joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications from New Jersey to talk about both. Hi, Carl.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure.
Want to start first about Facebook Follies. As I mentioned, I was watching this documentary and Ken was on it, and it was a situation where he found his wife was cheating on him through Facebook. He eventually divorced that wife, met another woman who he also met online, and he also started Facebook Follies. So where does Facebook Follies stand today? Or FacebookCheating.com, rather, stand today?
It's still, we still are running it. We still get people submitting to it on a regular basis. It's more of user-driven content, so it's people just sharing their stories about the things that unfortunately are happening on Facebook way too often, or at least starting on Facebook way too often and then going from online to offline. And, that's about it. I mean, it's a place for people to just share and talk and kind of bring awareness to the fact that there's a lot of relationships that are being formed, innocently, or at least that's the way that it's portrayed. And then going to, other things.
Is Facebook, in your estimation, something that can lead people to cheating, or is it just another avenue for people who are going to cheat anyway to cheat?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't want to label Facebook as like, you know, if you're on Facebook, it's going to lead to cheating. You know, it's just a social media tool. It just happens to be one that's really conversationally friendly, you know, versus Twitter. I mean, you can't really have a great chat on Twitter with their limited characters and everything. And Facebook's got all the little fancy private messages and all those things. So I think it just lends itself to online instant communication. It's got the Messenger app, which, you know, again, like that was a big thing because now it's unlike a text. I mean, it'll notify you like a text, but it doesn't show up in your text messaging history. So someone would have to have access to Messenger, you know, your Messenger to see what's going on. So I just think it's a tool that lends itself well to that. And I don't think people that cheat via Facebook were necessarily destined to cheat. I just think it opens up the door to conversations with whether it be coworkers or old flames or whatever. And then those conversations are unfortunately left unchecked because we just live in a society where there's very little value put on personal accountability. And, you know, then the ball starts rolling. And it's all downhill from there.
I guess also the question can be asked, you know, what is the definition of cheating? Because some people think cheating is only if you follow through on a relationship and it becomes physical. But yeah, you can be cheating with someone online and never meet that person, and it would be, in essence, something that's purely emotional.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, that, a lot of that, of course, is going to come, I guess, from your own worldview. If you don't hold a more traditional or Christian or conservative worldview, you might have a different attitude about cheating. But, yeah, I would say, however you want to label it, you might want to call it, okay, emotional affair, physical affair, online affair. Now, the bottom line is you're violating the trust in that marriage. So whether it's porn use, you know, and you're getting sexual gratification outside of your spouse, Facebook conversations back and forth where you're getting like that emotional affirmation and intimacy that should only be coming from your spouse, or you're meeting at a hotel for a quickie, you know, same thing. I mean, they're all different forms of affairs, but, or cheating, if you will, but all ultimately come from the same thing. They're violating the trust of, you know, of the spouse, and they're taking what should be going on only between a husband and wife, and it's extending other parties that shouldn't be involved.
Now, as I mentioned, I saw a repeat of this documentary, Facebook Follies. That was done a few years ago. And then, of course, FacebookCheating.com is a site that came out later. What I was curious to know is, do you have any kind of statistics to note if whether what goes on nefariously on Facebook or other social websites, is it more than it was when this first became prevalent a couple of years ago? Is it leveled off? Is it less? What?
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where stats are always those things where they're kind of, you know, they're all based upon people admitting things. So they're always a little skewed, I think. And I could be wrong here. Don't get me wrong, because like I'm more focused on some of the other aspects of our ministry than like necessarily just tracking Facebook stats. But I think the last stat was like in 50% of divorce cases, Facebook was mentioned. I think it's something like that. It's a pretty, whatever the number was, it was a really shockingly high number where Facebook was specifically mentioned. So, you know, whether we have month-to-date stats on it or not, I just think it's logical to assume that as our society or as our culture is taking more and more and more of our communication and our daily interaction offline to online, it's just a logical outcome. You know, just like the porn industry. I mean, porn has been around for years, but back in the day, you could only get it in a bookstore or a video place. You know, now it's, how many video places do you know where they actually sell porn? You know, maybe a few in like 20 square miles, you know, but because everything's going online. It's just it's accessible online, so that's where people are going.
And that brings us to the other aspect that I want to talk about. I mentioned that you are an outreach pastor with the Triple X Church. Tell us what the Triple X Church does and how it works.
Sure. Yeah. So we're a nonprofit ministry, a parachurch ministry. So we don't actually have like a physical building or anything. And we started back in 2002 when our founder, Craig Gross, decided that, hey, listen, pornography, he was a youth pastor originally. And he just saw that this was becoming a big issue in youth and decided, hey, there's no one out there really talking about this issue, raising awareness about the issue, providing resources around this issue. So we started the ministry, and the ministry's mission has always been about prevention, awareness, and recovery. Like, that's always been our three-pronged approach. We're about raising awareness regarding the issues of pornography. We're about helping parents or helping people prevent, like, whether their kids or spouses hopefully getting hooked on it through, like, tools like X3 Watch. And then we have recovery, because unfortunately there's a large amount of people out there who are addicted to porn. So we offer recovery resources. And then outside of that, we also have what we're probably really well known for is our outreach opportunities. So we go to 8 to 10 sex/porn shows a year. In fact, we're going to be doing one just in a matter of a few weeks in Chicago at the Exotica convention. And we go there and we hand out Bibles that say Jesus loves porn stars and give out free shirts and just talk to not only convention goers, but entertainers there, and just build conversations, build relationships, tell them Jesus loves them. And that's about it. And we don't, in that part of our ministry, we don't really get into the porn addiction aspects of it. It's more about just, set, you know, hey, look, we're here. Jesus loves you. You want to talk more? Here's our URL or here's my email address. I'll be happy to chat with you.
So you're not necessarily an enemy of the porn world, are you?
No, we purposely don't use the word. And sometimes this like gets us a little heat from some of the more conservative element or the more conservative Christian element specifically. But no, we don't come out and say, hey, listen, we're anti-porn or we're, you know, the enemies of porn. You know, like, we're not out to get rid of porn or censor. Like, that's not really our approach, you know? I mean, clearly there are things that, you know, porn has invaded our culture and we would prefer if it hadn't. But no, we're not out to put the porn industry out of business. You know, our approach is more like, hey, listen, we want to connect with the people in the industry, whether it be the people using it or the people producing it, build relationships with them, because we feel like in the end you get farther having dialogue and building conversations and you know, seeing where that goes rather than protesting or picketing or lobbying. I mean, there's a million groups out there doing that. We don't want to be one of them. That's not our approach.
And what has the what has the response been from the producers, for instance, of porn material?
Well, Donnie Pauling is a guy who was a producer at one point, and he's, I don't know if you ever heard of him, but, you know, his whole testimony is the fact that, you know, he was a big, big producer for, I think it was Playboy and all these things. And when he first met us, when he first met Craig, actually, at the Las Vegas AVN Awards, he was a little antagonistic. And over the years, a relationship developed and Donnie left the porn industry. And that does happen. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens. And I think we get pretty good favor. There's certainly people in the industry that don't want us at the convention, but I would say that 95% of the time, it's probably because they just don't understand why we're there. You know, big entertainer in the porn world, like, you know, he did a ton of films. He's at almost every Exotica. He was talking to a guy at a convention booth next to us, and the guy that was at the booth next to us was telling me this. He said, I talked to him, and I said, hey, what do you think about those Triple X Church guys? He's like, oh, yeah, I don't really know much about them. I just know that they sell software that gets rid of porn. You know, like, he thinks we're there to hawk software to rid the world of porn. It's like, Yeah, we have a software product that has filtering, but that's not what we're about necessarily. Like, that's a resource we offer, but we're not even here to talk about our software. But bottom line is, he's never really talked to us, so he doesn't know.
People can find out more information by going to the website, which is triplex.com, and also...
triplexchurch.com.
triplexchurch.com.
Triplexchurch.com is going to get you a very different result.
That's right, my mistake. Triplexchurch. I meant to say the word church. Didn't it's a little up there. triplexchurch.com. Also, they can check out facebookcheating.com. And Carl, I thank you very, very much for taking the time for being on the program with us.
Oh, man, hey, it was a pleasure. Enjoy it.
Carl Thomas Jr., Outreach Pastor with XXX Church. You can check their website at XXXChurch.com. And again, don't forget that word church. That's XXXChurch.com. You can also check out FacebookCheating.com. And you can go to my website at TheStuffFile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0254. And you'll find links to both sites.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we will talk about interior design shows and how they stack up against actual real life. Plus, Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter, and of course we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day. And lots more Stuff File news right here, right now on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Okay. Now, this next story begs to ask the question, what do you have to do to get arrested in Iowa? A Kuna, Iowa family is upset that a naked, drunken man who allegedly defecated on their carpet and flooded their kitchen was only cited with two misdemeanors but not arrested. The Gillespies woke up to a naked man walking around in their bedroom early on Sunday morning, but he quickly sprinted off into another room. My husband grabs the gun because we have no idea who this guy is, Trisha Gillespie said. He's like, get out of my house now, but the guy wouldn't leave, so he puts the gun to his head and says, I said get out. The suspect, Matthew Coombs, left the home after 911 was called, but he was still milling around outside when police arrived. Then everyone saw what the 25-year-old allegedly did downstairs. He took this sink sprayer out, and this drawer was in there. He put it in the drawer, turned it on full blast with hot water. It filled the entire drawer full, and then it flooded my entire kitchen, Tricia said. He craps on my floor, and he must have been playing in it because he streaked it up and down on my walls. The stain is finally gone, thank goodness. Now, instead of being arrested, Coombs was cited with two misdemeanors. The Kuna police have said that since that they have admitted that the responding officer probably should have arrested Coombs, and it's possible that Ada County prosecutors could charge him with a felony count of malicious injury to property. Makes you kind of wonder what that cop was thinking. I mean, if he didn't get arrested, did the police just let a naked man, possibly covered in his own feces, just wander off? That's one lenient town, isn't it? Yeah. Meanwhile, speaking of other people who are slightly, shall we say, imbalanced, because obviously that guy has to be a little imbalanced. A man in Kansas City is accused of breaking into a costume shop, stealing a giant chicken outfit, then walking into a bar next door wearing the getup. Now, police in the Cashew Tavern, I guess that's a place for nuts, saw the suspect grab a brick and toss it through a display window at the Kansas City Costume Company. He proceeded to take a large yellow cape and feathered hat that had been in storage for 20 years. Bar patrons were surprised to see him walk in and even pose for photos. He eventually was taken into custody and treated for mental illness. Oh, come on. Haven't you ever walked past a store window, saw a chicken costume inside, and said to yourself, I just have to have that? Oh, I'm sure we've all been there, huh? Okay, 26-year-old Michael Adrian was arrested in Lakeville, Minnesota in June for frightening officials at Lakeview North High School by skateboarding in front of the school in military dress, face covered by a bandana, with an arrow strapped to his arm and concealing knives, a box cutter, a slingshot, and pepper spray. Adrian told police he was merely testing, and I'm doing air quotes here, testing the school's security system by looking like an, and the term he used is the street vernacular for anal cavity. Okay? A judge ordered a mental evaluation, so he gets a checkup from the neck up. While I can't use the term that Michael did, I will say that he is an ass. And leave it at that. Okay, you know what they say about karma, right? So check this out. In June, a jury in Fresno, California decided that a 37-year-old by the name of Bobby Lee Pearson was guilty of burglary, but they accidentally signed the not guilty form instead. And by the time Judge W. Kent Hamlin caught the error, he could not change it because, you know, double jeopardy. So Pearson walked out a free man, went to his sister's home, got into a fight hours later, and was stabbed to death by the sister's boyfriend. Yeah, you want to laugh out loud, don't you? Anyway, suddenly, jail doesn't look so bad, does it? And finally, on this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Texas man was arrested on suspicion of drunk driving after he plowed his sports utility vehicle into a San Antonio house and then asked the homeowner if he could use the bathroom. 59-year-old John Rose was charged with driving while intoxicated. The homeowner, George Vasquez, said he was watching television when the SUV rammed into his home. I was watching the news. Sounds like an explosion at first. A couple of minutes after that, and here comes a car right through my living room, Vasquez says. Vasquez asked the driver if he was all right, and Rose then asked if he could use the bathroom. You know, I gotta tell you, if someone just plowed through my house with their car drunk and asked me to use my bathroom, I don't think I'd be so polite. And frankly, you can pee in your car for all I care. I mean, you're going to have an odd insurance claim anyway. Might as well add to it. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And you know that last guy in that last story is going to need some remodeling to his house, so this next story is probably going to be very important to him. Watching rooms or houses being transformed from drab to fab on television is so exciting, especially when it comes time for the reveal. It's amazing what they can do on those TV design shows with so little time and money. But how much of that gorgeous new room is really just smoke and mirrors? That's a question we have for former QVC host Donna Hoffman, aka the Interior Design Advocate. And Donna joins us on the line right now from Pennsylvania. Hi, Donna.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. I love watching a lot of these shows, especially The Reveal, but in the back of my mind, I'm saying, again, how much of this is real?
Well, let's talk TV land real and reality real. TV land is what you see on the flat screen, and reality is what happens in your family room or your living room. So there are a couple of little things you have to think about. First of all, we all love all the TV shows on decorating and design. Bravo's got some great ones. HGTV has some great ones. Adam Carolla's doing something new called Catch a Contractor with Spike TV, getting really great reviews on that. And they're fun, and they're entertaining, and they can be informative, but generally speaking, you're seeing a tiny little manipulated snippet of what the decorating and design process really is in terms of costs and in terms of real-time, real-life experience.
I think the thing that catches a lot of people off guard, I mean, I think a lot of us expect things are going to cost more probably than we see on TV. But as you say, I think it's the time factor. People are not aware of just how much time something takes to do.
Well, there are a couple of things going on. In terms of actual time, you know, people are loving all these great interiors you're seeing on house.com, very popular, wonderful website where people can get a lot of quick informational and inspirational images. But in reality, the average living room, start to finish, can take about 3 to 4 months when you're doing furniture that has to be manufactured someplace. Unless you're dealing with breakdown furniture, you go to a store, you bring the box home and you put it together, the kinds of things people are lusting after on all of those great blogs and in all the magazines, those interiors, there's no way something like that could be done, even in as little as a week to 10 days. Those interiors are taking months. Just the creative, Peter, issuing the creative, putting it together, sourcing everything, that can be a 4 to 6 week process. You don't see that on a 30-minute TV show, do you?
No, you don't. I've often heard also for people who are in couples, people who are married, if you want to really test a marriage, remodel a bathroom or kitchen.
If you really want to test a marriage, do your own wallpaper in a bathroom or a kitchen. That'll really make you loopy because that's challenging too. Well, listen, the greatest test of a marriage in design is control, fighting for control. If a marital couple has problems with little battles of who's in charge, it's going to really blow up terribly in the decorating and design process. Everybody needs to have an equal voice, but that's a whole other radio show or TV show.
Okay, so again, what is the biggest oversimplification we see perpetrated on TV as far as design is concerned?
This one. Have you ever watched a show and then you see that lower graphic come up and it says 2 a.m. Thursday morning or Sunday night? Well, in the real world, the contractors and the designers that you're working with, they have families that they want to be with just the way you do have a family that you want to be with. So in TV land, people will work till 11 at night or 4 in the morning or on Saturdays and Sundays, but that does not happen in the real world. In the real world, contractors, because they're working so hard, they tend to show up on a job site at about 8 in the morning, and they usually, or possibly some of them roll in at 9, and they tend to knock off somewhere around 3:30, 4 o'clock. Some people call it contractors' banker's hours. So this idea that you can fast-track a project and get your crew working all hours of the days and night, that's TV fantasy. That's not at all reality. And that really confuses clients because people in decorating and design think that they can either do it themselves pretty quick or have a team come in and do it really quickly. And you're just not going to get those long hours.
I hear you. As a matter of fact, from personal experience, something I just found out just yesterday, I needed to get the shingles done on my house, and everything's booked and everything's ready to go, and the contractor will be able to do it in September.
That is correct. Good contractors, good designers, there are waits to get in to see these people. You should be worried about the contractor that can see you next Tuesday. It means this guy may be a little bit light in, on his workload, and why. And I don't mean being able to come in and see you on that first appointment to talk to you about your roof in your case, but in terms of being able to start your job, 2 to 3 months waits are absolutely happening. Both in Canada and the U.S., we're seeing that the builder community is really rebounding beautifully, and a lot of builders are starting to accumulate 4, 5, and 6 month waits to get projects started.
So what are some of the tips you can share with people who to help them avoid wasting big bucks when it comes to decorating?
Okay, well, the first thing is, unlike what you see on TV shows where you have donated labor and you can have highly discounted labor and donated or discounted product, you know, back in the real world, you really have to look at your budget first, and you have to make sure that you are realistic in asking yourself, what kind of quality and performance do I expect out of this widget that I'm buying, sofa, table, whatever. And once you identify whether you are an entry-level quality and price person, mid-level quality and price person, or upper-level quality and price person, if you're working on your own, I want you to do some research, and I want you to create your budget range first. Not what you, not your beautiful choices, but first your budget before you do any shopping. And then I want you to divide that into some line item expenditures and do some research. What are the tables you like tend to cost? And then I want you to look at how the whole thing will map out. The worst thing people do in decorating a design that blows big bucks is that they work without a plan. It's like going food shopping when you're hungry. You're going to overbuy or buy the wrong stuff. So that would be a key point that nobody really talks about in decorating a design. Everybody talks about how to pick out a color, but you have to look at the bones, which is budget, because budget is the king of all of design.
One of the things you see a lot of in television these days are the DIY shows. I once saw a plumber's truck go by with the motto on it, "I get paid to correct the mistakes you tried to fix."
Well, listen, you know, again, it comes down to budget. Not everybody can has the flexibility to be able to bring on a pro to do something. But the bottom line is that a trained and practiced professional, and practice is the operative word, Peter, they're going to do things faster and more efficiently and more correctly than most DIYers will. That said, sometimes you have to do your own tiling because your kitchen budget is pressed and you just cannot afford to bring in that pro. But I am all for hiring experienced professionals, especially when you're investing big dollars, especially.
I mentioned earlier you're the interior design advocate. You have a website, idhdesignsrather.com. What will people find when they go to your site?
Actually, the website for the interior design advocate is spelled just like it said. It's theinteriordesignadvocate.com, and that's where people can go to find information for any decorating lover and any design enthusiast to find information that will empower you to get a better result either working on your own, design smarter, better control of your project, more mileage out of your budget, wiser use of your budget, or you can buy, and you can do that by purchasing one of our systems or classes, or you can take one of our simple classes on how to find and hire the right interior design professional and how to avoid the nightmare, because they're both out there working, the great ones and the not so great ones. So at the Interior Design Advocate, we're all about advocating on behalf of you, the design lover, and making your projects or home as fabulous as you want them to be, but getting you there wisely.
Do you find that people, just generally speaking, with all the proliferation of these television shows, are themselves becoming a little more creative, even in the smaller things, because of what they learned or gleaned from these shows?
You know, Peter, that's a can of worms. I think the great thing about the decorating and design shows is that it's really inspired a greater love and appreciation of design itself, and a greater awareness of it. I think that's wonderful. I do think it gives people a false sense of their own efficacy, and it oversimplifies a highly complicated process. So I think that the design shows, while they can be inspiring and fun, you got to watch out for idiosyncratic information that's given out or information that's very specific to a quirky space. So I think there's a double-edged sword there. Did I answer that sufficiently?
Absolutely. Basically, what you're saying is what any carpenter will tell you, and that's due diligence. It's the old, you know, measure twice, cut once kind of situation.
Very much so, and be careful of overestimating your own ability. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, when they go to the home store and they stand in front of this huge wall of wall color, you know, they kind of panic and think, wow, you know, on the TV shows, they just show this wonderful board of fabrics and colors, and nobody really stops to think about how long it takes to put all that together. And then a layperson is standing in front of this huge wall of wall samples or color samples, and, you know, you walk out of there and you walk into your house and you've got 50 different color samples with you. That means that you're in over your head. You should never have more than two or three color samples with you. So, again, be careful of overestimating your ability And if it's a really, really big, expensive project or you've moved into a new home, you might want to call in a pro to help guide you through, even if it's just the basics.
Again, the website you mentioned, theinteriordesignadvocate.com, correct?
Yes, that is it. On our website, a portion of all of our proceeds gets donated to a wonderful not-for-profit called Homefront, and that is a great organization dedicated to erasing homelessness. So that's a real important part of our mission as well at theinteriordesignadvocate.com. Not just empowering decorating and design lovers, but we really want to help anybody in need of housing in any way, shape, or form.
Excellent. Donna, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
It was great talking to you, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Donna Hoffman, the Interior Design Advocate. Again, you can check out her website at theinteriordesignadvocate.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0254, and you'll find the links to Donna's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you ever heard about the two corporate CEOs who settled a potential legal dispute by arm wrestling? Here's the story. 20 years ago, two different airline companies discovered that they were using the same exact advertising slogan. It was quite a coincidence, but both executives knew that only one company could keep using it. They could have easily sued each other, as so many do these days, but they chose another option instead. The CEO of Southwest Airlines, who happens to be a lawyer, agreed to a public arm wrestling match with the chairman of the other company. So, who won? Well, they both did. Southwest actually got to keep the slogan, but the event was used to raise money for local charities, too. So the companies solved their problem and earned a lot of respect in the process. Let's be fair, this is a great story because it shows how two leaders said no to a messy legal fight and turned a dispute into a lesson on creative problem solving. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And Stuart's back once again to tell us what's between the pages. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Well, I review quite a lot of books, but in this edition of Book Banter, I decided to review a novel. Oh. I mean, with summer coming up, people like to read novels. Very relaxing.
Okay.
So I figured this is I'm going to review one novel that, from an author who I thought is, that really, for our first book, I thought it was terrific. See, back in 2006, Heather O'Neill, who's from Montreal, she burst on the Canadian literary scene in a very big way with her debut novel, Lullabies for Little Criminals. Now, this novel, which focused on a young girl growing up in a seamy Montreal neighborhood, became an immediate bestseller, garnered critical acclaim across Canada, was a finalist for the Governor General's Award for Fiction, and in 2007 won the CBC Canada Reads competition. Now, such immediate success for a debut novel can bring with it the pressure of the sophomore jinx. However, Ms. O'Neill has nothing to worry about with her second novel, the equally compelling and highly readable The Girl Who Was Saturday Night.
The Girl Who Was Saturday Night.
That's right.
I'm going to leave that title alone. It might get me in trouble.
Oh, yes. whether it be even on a Sunday morning, so we won't...
Especially on a Sunday morning.
Well, the story centers around a pair of twin siblings, Nushka and Nicolas Tremblay, who live with their grandfather in a rundown section of Saint-Laurent Boulevard around 1994-95. Just as the fury that was the second sovereignty referendum was descending upon the entire province of Quebec. However, Nushka and Nicola have a claim to fame that, as they approached their 20th birthday, have been unsuccessfully trying to shake off their shoulders. Their father was Étienne Tremblay, who made his name as a prominent Quebec folk singer during the 60s and 70s, with his songs that portray the life of working-class Quebecers that touched a raw nerve with his audiences, and by 1995 was regarded as a has-been, and trying to make a comeback on the eve of the referendum campaign. As a result of their father's fame as a popular folk singer, the twins became instant vedettes, or celebrities, on French language TV during that time. They were known as Little Nushka and Little Nicolas. So it was this type of fame that the pair tried in vain to disassociate themselves with, especially when a documentary crew who wants to produce a film about their lives incessantly hound them throughout their neighborhood. So Nushka tries to live a normal life, working as a clerk in a magazine store and taking night classes to earn her high school diploma. But the spotlight shines on her again when she accidentally enters a beauty pageant as she enrolls for courses at the local community center and ends up winning the contest.
Whoa, 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 whoa. How do you accidentally enter a beauty contest?
Oh, believe me, somehow Nushka manages to find a way to get to stumble onto the red carpet.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting when you read it. Now, for Nicolas, he spends his time angrily cutting himself off from his past and ends up in a series of misfortunes, yet he remains a vital means of emotional support for his twin sister. And Nushka tries for emotional stability when she marries Raphael, a former juvenile figure skating champion who's also trying to shrug off his flirtation with the celebrity spotlight at a young age. So let me tell you about this book. It's a terrific literary follow-up to Lullabies for Little Criminals, as Heather O'Neill definitely portrays the hardship, heartbreak, and distant hopes that come with the people who inhabit the world of Saint Laurent Boulevard, especially the downtown area that we all know as the Main, where alcohol and cigarettes are their lifeblood, and a shopping expedition to the local Salvation Army thrift store is regarded as a major outing. The characters are gritty and realistic with a tinge of sadness that can garner a great deal of sympathy with the reader, and the dialogue that dominates the narrative is filled with the anger and frustration that comes with being part of a capital D dysfunctional family and coping with having fame reluctantly thrust upon them at an early age, yet there are discrete traces of emotional support from such personal difficulties. So with such a quality novel as The Girl Who Was Saturday Night, Heather O'Neill is quickly proving herself as a novelist who is becoming the voice of the hopefully downtrodden of one of Montreal's poorest neighborhoods.
I'm still curious as to how one gets to accidentally enter a beauty pageant, but nonetheless, again, the book is called...
It's called The Girl Who Was Saturday Night by Heather O'Neill. It's published by HarperCollins, and it's $29.99.
And since it deals with twins... one's a boy, one's a girl. Is the girl who was Saturday Night the twin girl, or is am I going barking up the wrong tree here?
I think you're right about that, because don't forget the beauty pageants were always shown on Saturday night
or Sunday,
depending.
Yeah.
Also, when you think of Saturday night in on Saint Laurent Boulevard, it's a very happening kind of street.
The Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Oh, yeah, and plenty of broken dreams there, let me tell you.
Okay. Now, dare I ask, is there another book you can recommend that is similar to this one for other summer reading that people might have? Although I doubt you'll find another book where someone accidentally enters into a beauty pageant.
Well, I could recommend two books about how novels dealt with the downtrodden. I mean, for example, there's The Grapes of Wrath from 1939, which is by John Steinbeck, about the people in the Dust Bowl during the Great Depression, which Viking, the original publisher, just reissued a 75th anniversary edition with the original cover artwork from when the book was first released. So that's one. And a book about Montreal, another book about Montreal's downtrodden, read The Tin Flute by Gabriel Waugh, which covers a family in the working class of Saint-Henri during the 1940s.
Oh, I thought you would have brought up Dickens.
I could have, but I thought I'd stay a little bit more, towards the last 60, 70 years or so.
More contemporary.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So the current book again is?
It's called The Girl Who Was Saturday Night by Heather O'Neill, published by HarperCollins, and it's $29.99.
And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman?
Well, if I'm not in the bookstore, you catch me in the Montreal Times in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
So you're not hanging around Saint Laurent?
Not right now. Well, not yet.
Okay.
That's still a little early.
It's still a little early. Stuart Nolman. I'm going to puberty again. Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Thank you very much, Stuart.
You're welcome, Peter.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have a few more Stuff File news stories to get to, plus, of course, an idiot of the day. Public health officials in San Francisco have discovered that a woman in the city, identified only as Erica J., age 43, has been breeding rats for years for the specific purpose of letting them go to infest the city. They say they have exterminated thousands of rats in her neighborhood. The woman was eventually evicted from her room, but she kept on at the breeding program while living under a bridge. A spokeswoman for the city's Animal Care and Control Agency notes that whenever its officers see Erica on the street, they confiscate more rats, but say it's likely she's hiding even more. Well, can't they just simply find a snake lady for her to live with? Problem solved. Yeah. An attempted carjacking in Seattle failed when three carjackers found they were in a vehicle with a manual transmission and none of them knew how to drive a stick shift. Nancy Fredrickson said she was getting something out of the trunk of her car when she turned around to see a gun in her face. Three teens demanded her keys and jumped into her Kia. They tried but failed to get it to move, and then they ran away. The 70-year-old was in tears when she called 911, but later laughed at the inept carjackers. She never imagined a stick shift would prevent a carjacking, but she's happy. She and her car were unharmed. And again, the problem with young criminals today is improper planning. Do your homework, kids. A restaurant in DeBary, Florida, called the sheriff to report a patron had been drinking alcohol in the place for an hour and had a child with her. Now, when a deputy arrived, the woman was gone, so the deputy went to monitor traffic in a nearby school zone. A car sped through, going 36 miles in a 20-mile zone, and he pulled her over. The driver matched the description of the drunk. The deputy asked what she had been doing at the restaurant. Homeschooling her 8-year-old, she said, for a restaurant teaching lesson. Sheila Jones, age 48, measured a blood alcohol level of 0.178 and 0.174%. That's double the legal limit. She was arrested on charges of DUI and child neglect. Hopefully, the kid learned a better lesson than the mom intended to teach her that day. And finally, we're about to arrest your police chief, according to Athens County Prosecutor Keller Blackman. That's what he told the mayor of Gloucester, Ohio, population 1800. Chief Lucas Mace, age 38, had responded to a traffic accident. The at-fault driver was allegedly using heroin and had warrants out for her arrest. Rather than bust 23-year-old Hillary Hooper, Blackburn says he not only dated her, but he also hid her from other officers so he wouldn't, wouldn't be arrested. His patrol car had been taken in as evidence since it appears he had sex with Hooper in the car. It went on for weeks until Mace was arrested at work and Hooper turned himself in. Mace has been indicted on 12 charges, including 3 felonies, and Mayor Miles Wolf suspended him without pay. Mace's salary is $32,000 per year, and the most junior officer is paid $8.50 per hour. The chief was still able to post $10,000 bail to be released from jail and has hired a lawyer. Yeah, this definitely isn't Opie's Mayberry, is it? Ha. Anyway, that police officer was dangerously close to being the idiot of the day, but I didn't make him that. However, this next story, well, this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
A Kansas woman is facing arson charges after she allegedly set a small fire in her home while trying to kill a spider. Ginny Griffith used a cigarette lighter to set some towels on fire in an attempt to assassinate the arachnid. 5 Hutchinson Fire Department units were able to extinguish the small fire in Griffith's half of the duplex that she lives in. Firefighters found multiple points of origin for the fire, and Griffith was arrested and charged with aggravated arson because the other half of the duplex was occupied. No one was injured, and the structure only suffered light smoke damage. No word, by the way, on if the spider survived. Now, you know I have to ask the question. Why, oh why, would someone go around the house setting fires all in an attempt to kill a spider, especially since a rolled-up newspaper could have probably done the trick? Well, one reason and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0254. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0254. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air online or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.